Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. For the week of October 22nd, 2018, as always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by my partner in crime, Rick Monsey. Rick, how you doing this morning?
Hey, Robert, I'm okay. Played the Mega Million Lotto with my friend April and didn't win, so I just made another donation to the poor people tax, but that's okay.
If you would have won, would you have been on the show today?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that, and I was thinking about it for a second, and I would still be on the show, but it would be hard for me to contain my excitement, and I probably would eventually buy a better headset than the one I have now. But all things the same, that's okay. I'm used to losing these things.
Yeah, that's all we ask for is if you could provide some production updates, if you do win the Mega Millions, get us a pro studio. Maybe we fly to the same location every week to record. Will you provide that for us if you win the lottery?
Yeah, we'll actually go to Vegas every Sunday morning so that, or wherever the next fight night's happening. That would be part of the bucket list next time we get a chance to win $1 billion on a Friday.
Okay, that sounds good. But before we win $1 billion, we probably need the feedback from the rest of our loyal listeners on how we can improve the show, what they want to talk about, questions they have for us. We got an email coming through this week that just adds to a segment, and that email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. And of course, you can hit us up on Twitter at MMATorch. That is at MMATorch, and the show proper account, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, at MMA Livecast. That is at MMALivecast. Okay, Rick, let's jump right into it. And I think we're kind of breaking format this week. This might be the first time we've ever opened the show not talking UFC, Bellator, or even WWE. We are going to talk this week about one championship. That is because one, no pun intended, Eddie Alvarez this week signed with one in a move that had been speculated about on Twitter. There had been some legitimate reports circulating around about it that Eddie Alvarez would be making the move to one. But I don't think anybody really took it seriously. Maybe thought it was a negotiating ploy that maybe his site had leaked. But no, the word came out this week. He put up a Twitter video announcing it. Eddie Alvarez, the former UFC lightweight champion, is now a fighter for one championship. Rick, what was your initial reaction upon hearing this news?
Initially, I was really surprised. But again, my three-day rule applies. And so after a couple of days, I was thinking about it. And it kind of makes sense just for Eddie Alvarez, where he is not necessarily on a decline. I mean, his record's still really good, and he's still a real popular fighter. Sure, he just lost his fight against Dustin Poirier, the rematch, but I mean, he beat Justin Gaethje. The fight beforehand was a no contest with Dustin Poirier, and he had that big-time fight with Conor McGregor, which he was on the losing end of. But he's still a fighter that people like to see. You know, he's Mr. Underground. And so if he would have signed back with the UFC, that would have been great. But he is a commodity with the diehard fans that would be seeking out to watch the one promotion anyways. So I think it's kind of a perfect fit.
Yeah, I think it shows a great deal of self-awareness on the side of Alvarez in that he knows his time may have passed, but he's not over the hill in that lightweight division is loaded and he very well could have risen back to the top of it. But it's a crowded heap at the top. At the same time, he's still a markable commodity. And like you said, he has an amazing amount of currency with the hardcore MMA fans, a guy that, you know, has fought on the regional scene, had some legendary fights on Bellator. When we talk about the great Bellator fights, we always have to reference what Eddie Alvarez did over there. And he became a champion in the UFC in one of its most stacked divisions and was one half of one of the biggest fights the UFC ever put forward. With that said, I always find it funny that he main evented UFC 205 with Conor McGregor. Obviously, Conor is the big draw in that situation. But his next fight, the initial fight with Poirier, was on a prelim. It was a main event of a prelim. And I think that kind of shows the volatility of what MMA stardom can be when you're not one of those tippy top guys. So I think it shows a great amount of self-awareness by Eddie Alvarez of realizing where he is in his career and how he can maximize the remainder of his earning potential. And I got to give him all the credit in the world for making such a move. Does it say anything though about the UFC and Bellator that neither one of them were able to lure away one of the top fighters in the world?
Well, I was looking at an interview that BJPenn.com posted, and it was Alvarez. He was at part of the One Heart of the Lion conference call. And he was saying, and this is, I'm not verbatim quoting, but Alvarez says, we got offers from just about everyone you can think of, i.e. meaning Bellator, UFC, and other promotions. Everyone expressed interest. The idea of one championship, it's the only organization I haven't held a world title in. I won the Bellator title, and I won the UFC title in my career. As far as I'm concerned, one championship is the only organization that I haven't got to touch the world title belt with. And so, you know, end of quote. But I think that is his motivation, if it's not just the money. I mean, I'd imagine one championship was going to be paying him very well to come over and, you know, make the flight and make the time to come where they're predominantly featured at. But I think that part of it, too, is he just wants to make history in some way. And the way he can is winning three world championships in three different promotions, which is a pretty cool thing. To go back to what you were saying, though, I know that it does say something to a certain extent that UFC and Bellator couldn't, you know, get Eddie Alvarez back to wherever they were at. But, you know, his loss against Conor McGregor was a huge amount of exposure. And I mean, I've seen Conor McGregor being turned into a Dragon Ball Z character and knocking out Eddie Alvarez as part of memes and little gifs and stuff like that, where his biggest exposure probably of his career will be getting knocked out pretty decisively by Conor McGregor. So I don't blame him for kind of wanting to get out of that limelight.
No, and there may be something to that. As we said, you know, you go into the Conor orbit and you oftentimes end up burned. I think Nate Diaz and maybe Khabib Nurmagomedov, we'll see, are the ones that have escaped that fate. But yeah, there's definitely something to be gained for him to have those multiple title belts, kind of be like the Austin Aries of MMA, where he's just walking around with all these belts. And I think it's an interesting move on his behalf for a lot of reasons. And you talked about the finances of one. I would direct you to an article written by John Nash of Bloody Elbow, and he explained that ONE is kind of this amazing company that makes a lot of money but also spends a ton of money in the Chinese marketplace. ONE where, you know, in depositions, Dana White has tried to frame as this monolith in MMA, and it's something that's not really on the radar as much here in the Western world. But maybe a move like this is something to watch out for. Do you think this is a template, though, set forward by Eddie Alvarez? Should other fighters look to do this towards not the end of their career? Because we don't want to have, you know, that situation where we just see these Bellator type of fighters who are so far past it and shouldn't be fighting. But a guy who's maybe peaked and on the decline but still has something left, fighting in an organization like ONE or any of these other foreign organizations where you could really be the big fish in a smaller sea and make a ton of money, is this a good move that other vets should consider?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, especially for the lighter weight class guys, you know, like an Eddie Alvarez, you know, for heavyweights, we've seen in UFC when these guys are kind of been beat up enough, they just go over to Bellator or other promotions that'll take them. I think the commodity for heavyweights is kind of always there. But for these lighter weight guys, and if they've gone through two different divisions and things aren't going so well, you know, they can still test the water somewhere else, and ONE championship, if they want to stay competitive, would be a great spot for it. It's hard to think that someone like Anthony Pettis would ever go anywhere but the UFC. But I mean, even with Anthony Pettis's loss, he's still a huge star and very popular. And so if ONE FC were to offer him something, ONE championship, sorry, I think that would be a huge gain for them. And just people like that, you know. I mean, again, another idea would be like a Donald Cerrone, who arguably is in the decline, but still incredibly popular. You know, if he ever left the UFC, we would just assume he'd go to Bellator. But again, ONE championship, if they want to make him an offer, that would bring eyeballs to their promotion. I just wonder, are they doing this because they just want to be more popular in the areas that they already are popular in? Or are they trying to make a move to North America or Europe or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know that answer offhand. I don't think anybody really does, but this is a move that would facilitate such a thing happening. I mean, ONE got a lot more interesting than it was this time last week. Before this, I think ONE was kind of known as the Ben Askren promotion. And, you know, with all due respect to Ben Askren and his legions and legions of fans on social media, nobody's beaten down the door to watch a Ben Askren fight. Eddie Alvarez is one of the most exciting fighters in UFC history. Or I should say in MMA history. So I think there's definitely something to be gained there by trying to penetrate the US or the European market. Do you get the sense that they're really trying to make a move to expand into their more non-traditional Asian markets?
I'll save my opinion for that until we see how the first Eddie Alvarez fight is promoted. You know, if we see some actual heavy promotion on the line and here in the United States on any sort of television, or just, you know, if they're making a push more than they would normally for any other fight night, then yeah, I think that they would be using Eddie Alvarez to test the waters. I do want to say, too, going back to Eddie Alvarez's goals to win the championship and have a third title belt, it's going to be a real sad plight, though, if he doesn't succeed. You know, if he kind of goes in there and has a similar career path that Benson Henderson has since he came to Bellator, where he comes in, he kind of wins one, he wins another, loses one, you know, back and forth. Eddie Alvarez, while he could be making money and winning fights out there, he's going to be kind of lost in the main MMA brain if he doesn't. He has to be successful for this to be a good idea, in my opinion, for one championship.
And on that note, we're going to read an email that we got from Patrick from Germany. And Patrick, if we're pronouncing your name wrong, kind of send us another email with some phonetic spelling. But we're going to go with Patrick from here. And he says, hey, here's Patrick from Germany. Just wanted to ask about one championship. Is it a good promotion? Did you two ever watch it? And will you watch it now that Eddie Alvarez is there? Thank you very much. So thank you for the email, Patrick. I would not claim to be an expert on one whatsoever. Like I said, the majority of my exposure to one has to do with the Ben Askren fights. And it's not like it was something that I was, you know, waiting, staying up in the middle of the night to watch. It was just, you always had an awareness when Ben Askren would be engaging in these, what were essentially squash matches. And maybe that'll go to what you were saying, Rick, how they really set him up well to succeed. With that said, obviously, as we are saying, there is a bunch more interest in one at this point. And I think Eddie Alvarez draws that out. I would actually refer you to our feature writer on MMA Torch, Dylan Boyker. He's done a couple of features and some interviews for one championship, and he's done some previews. So maybe check him out. You can find his stuff on our site. Rick, what's been your exposure to one prior to this?
It's been very limited. And basically, anytime Ben Askren was around, that's when I would pique my interest. But Patrick, I do think, to answer part of your question, I think I will watch it now. Did you ever watch it? Not really. But now that they have Eddie Alvarez, they've piqued my interest. And so whether it be actually ordering the shows or seeing whatever highlights might be floating around online afterwards, you know, I think that I will be starting to pay a lot of attention, because now it's kind of the – what was it when Ric Flair was trying to win Harley Race's championship? What did they call it, like the race to the gold or something like that? That's what Eddie Alvarez is doing right now.
Gold or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's Eddie Alvarez's career path right now. And I hope he's successful, you know, and I hope this just opens up opportunities for other MMA fighters, because I think this is ultimately a good story. It was confusing at first, and everybody, I think, in the media was like, huh? But it makes sense now, and I'm happy.
You are happy, so I guess that's a good thing. Last week, we had the interview with Lee Daly, and I asked him about Ryzen. And I said, how come Ryzen hasn't taken off, you know, to fill the vacuum for Pride? And I was thinking, when I asked him the question, more of, you know, a cultural context, meaning that, well, it was the point in time in the 2000s, and MMA was just rising, and all this stuff was going on. But his answer, I think, was very poignant whenever he said, well, just all these things ultimately in combat sports, be it wrestling, MMA, or boxing, depend on stars. If you have the stars, people are going to watch. And that's always kind of how it's been and how it's going to be probably for the rest of our time analyzing such things. And this is a case of one of those promotions gaining a star. I will say this about one, though. I just mentioned Ryzen. Ryzen's like this fun promotion with a quasi-pro wrestling aspect to it, and you have Gabby Garcia fighting the like 45-year-old wrestler that was half her size. You got Crow Cop doing stuff up there. You had Ian McCall over there. But one is completely different. One's not in Japan. One's in China. And there's been a lot of articles about how culturally different China is from the rest of the Western world, and even from Japan, and how, you know, they don't present MMA as this sort of outlaw type of thing the way American promotions or Japanese promotions do. It's a very, very different culture, and it's presented very differently. So I think there may be some cultural exchange going on where it looks like a little bit different than what we're used to seeing with MMA, but obviously this is going to be the greatest amount of exposure that it ever could possibly have.
Yeah, it's going to be a good thing. And I always like watching just a new twist on different promotions like that, whether it be cultural differences or just promotional styles. It'll be fun to kind of experiment with this.
It will be, and I want to address something that a lot of people have asked about too. Whenever they say, you know, is Eddie Alvarez giving up? Is he, you know, he can't hang anymore? Is that what he's doing? I think we've seen the best of Eddie Alvarez, and I think it's okay for somebody like that to then at the end of their career do something that will be a little more profitable without being so damaging to the person. And there is a precedent for this in other sports, you know, about 10 or 12 years ago. And you remember this living in LA, Rick, you had David Beckham come to the MLS, come to the American Soccer League, which is not the top of soccer leagues. And I'm not even really an expert on soccer, but I just know the MLS isn't a big deal when it comes to global soccer leagues, but you had a big star like David Beckham come over here and really just get treated like this celebrity royal athlete and this delicacy from another country. And I thought that was what a great move, that he didn't have to be in the uber competitive world that he was in, but still get to be a big star. You've had guys like Allen Iverson and Tracy McGrady from American basketball go overseas and make a lot of money. This year, there was a lot of talk about Dwayne Wade being offered a massive contract to finish out his career overseas. I think that's a good template for a lot of people to take, especially if in MMA, if it's not going to be as brutal as everything had been for you throughout your career. What are your thoughts on that, Rick?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think that Eddie Alvarez, he's 34 years old. He's probably not at his peak, like you said. We've probably already seen that. And I think it's, at this point, whatever he needs to do for himself and his family is the right move. And he could easily just retire and sit on his laurels. But I mean, he wants to go out there and still be competitive and win a championship. While it not being the top two promotions, in my opinion, in the world, it's still somewhere that's going to be competitive. And it's good for the promotion. So, sure. I mean, he's an athlete and this is how he makes his money. So he needs to go and use his body and his tools in the best way possible. And if that's relocation, then that's fine.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Where are we on the state of free agency in MMA? Like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we saw a lot of migration from the UFC to Bellator. You saw the Ryan Baders and the Rory McDonalds and the Gegard Mousasis move over to Bellator. Are we in a true era of free agency right now in MMA?
I think it's getting closer to that than it's ever been. And that's kind of an exciting time, honestly. That's going to be where UFC isn't dominating everything. And then with this, with people going back and forth to different promotions, hopefully this gives a chance to the people we don't know who weren't established in either Bellator or UFC get their names out there a little bit more by fighting these guys. And then it kind of creates, I wouldn't say a Monday Night War, because that's never really, in my opinion, going to happen in MMA. And the only way it could have happened was with Bellator, and it hasn't. So maybe this is a way to get to that area, you know, where it won't be the Pride UFC feud, but it'll be UFC being like, man, we're losing a lot of these good fighters to different promotions. To a certain extent, though, I think Dana White might be relieved that Eddie Alvarez chose this destination, because Eddie Alvarez is a guy where you know that the UFC appreciated having him around. They advertised him as kind of like this like scrappy underdog fighter that's like, you know, a cult. He's like a cult classic movie. All the true hardcore fans like him. But I don't know how much marketability they saw him in him. He was a good main event, co-main event guy, but the underground king as far as, you know, a future star, I don't know how that would have went. And the UFC risked losing a lot of contenders to him, like lightweights who they're trying to promote. Eventually they might have had to pair him up with Eddie Alvarez, and so they're like, just go. You know, it's almost to the extent of Jake Shields and stuff like that, where Jake Shields is really good, you know, and he arguably could have been fighting for a championship after a couple more wins, but they just kind of let him go.
The difference there is Eddie Alvarez is a much more exciting fighter than Jake Shields was.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think like Jake Shields in other promotions, you know, be it World Series of Fighting or whatever, the PFL, I don't think anybody really cares, with all due respect to Jake Shields and his possible army of fans that also exists. Eddie Alvarez has always been a fun fighter. So there's definitely some currency there. Let's talk about something that I cannot believe we're talking about. We have to give a little bit of oxygen to. This past week, somehow not Mayweather-McGregor boxing, not a rematch between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor got dusted up, but no, somehow Khabib versus Mayweather in a boxing match being talked about by both sides, with Dana White coming in and saying, no, 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 this is not going to happen. Do not get your hopes up or do not invest any energy in this. What do you make of all this, Rick?
This is ridiculous. I got in an argument with someone at work about this, like really late at night. We're in a van, you know, going from our work to our parking lot. And they were like, did you hear Khabib's going to be fighting Floyd Mayweather? I was like, no, just let's stop talking. This is not going to happen. And I just, you know, I just thought this was ridiculous. And I'm almost really tired about hearing stuff like this. Like Khabib, he's just out there right now. He's enjoying the post-fight enthusiasm he's getting and exposure he's getting from the Conor McGregor fight and the scrap afterwards. But to realistically put him in a boxing fight against Floyd Mayweather is even more ridiculous than when it happened with Conor McGregor. Because at least Conor McGregor was a striker.
Well, I was going to say, at least there was – you could fool the marks, so to speak, with the McGregor-Mayweather in that one guy always knocked out people with his fist against the boxer that hadn't knocked anybody out in a really, really long time. So you could put some intrigue there to the masses. Khabib couldn't box against Raging Al in their fight. What makes you think that it would be even – an athletic contest worth seeing? I don't know what's going on with Mayweather. I think he's just doing what he does to keep himself in the headlines, whether it's between these guys, whether it's another Pacquiao fight. It's just Mayweather doing what he does best, and that is self-promotion. I hate these things, and we're taking part of it in that people say stuff, and then people write about it, and people discuss it, it gets aggregated, and then it just becomes a bigger thing than it actually needs to be, and we're participating in that right now. But it's just ridiculous, man. That's just what a weird thing to even be considered to be part of the discourse at this point.
Boxing needs to stop trying to take MMA fighters and bringing them to their world to make some excitement in the boxing media. I mean, this is one of the most talked about things. And don't get me wrong, we'll talk about this later. There's a lot of things happening in boxing right now, both good and bad, that are bringing a lot of news. But just because it worked with Conor McGregor as far as a promotional standpoint goes – does not at all mean it's going to work for Khabib. Because unlike boxing, where everybody in boxing are striking boxers, in MMA, everybody has these different practices that they're really good at. Conor McGregor was a good striker, like I said. Khabib is not. I mean, Khabib was doing pretty good against Conor in their fight, but he is not a championship-level boxer. And he would go out there and embarrass himself, in my opinion, and he would embarrass the sport of MMA. And that's it.
So being that we've just decried about how awful it all is, probably going to happen then, right?
We're going to say it's never going to happen. And by this time next year, you know, when we're wondering where Khabib is, we're going to see Dana White wearing a Zuffa boxing shirt.
Yeah. And we have no spine. So we'll be saying what a great idea it is. What a way it's going to lift up both sports. We'll have completely changed our tune by that point, right?
Yeah. We'll seem like Fairweather fans right there.
That's a heck of a Freudian slip right there.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Fairweather. It's going to be my new boxing gimmick. Let's stay on the boxing meets MMA path on a wrestling podcast. Let's talk about what Canelo Alvarez did this week. He signed an exclusive deal with DAZN. As we know, DAZN trying to become the streaming hub for combat sports. They've got the Bellator deal. They have a ton of boxing on there. Boxing really seems to be their path to gain subscribership. And then internationally, as we heard from our friend Patrick, you also get some you get UFC, and you get some American sports like the NFL or Major League Baseball. But you had an exclusive deal for Canelo Alvarez, which is a big deal. Outside of the Floyd Mayweathers of the world, maybe Manny Pacquiao, Canelo's the guy in boxing, maybe the most visible boxer in the world right now. And Rick, you're a big boxing guy. What do you make of this?
I think that it's a huge get for DAZN. And I mean, they didn't get it cheap, though. From what I understand, Canelo Alvarez struck a $365 million deal with DAZN. And that'll include any of the Canelo's future fights that he has coming up. In fact, he has one coming up December 15, Canelo versus, I believe he's an English boxer, Felding. And I think that we're in a transitional phase here as fans of boxing. And it's interesting to note that Matchroom and Golden Boy, who usually have been, well, Golden Boy at least has been working almost exclusively with HBO, are now looking in DAZN's direction. Because HBO, as many of you know, only has two more fights scheduled, period. And so their last fight, I believe, is November 25th, and then that's it for them. So Golden Boy doesn't want to be just standing around doing nothing. I mean, their purpose is to promote fights, and so it looks like DAZN is where they're looking to do some of that, and they're putting their most marketable fighter, Canelo Alvarez, right there on the streaming service. And I think that's a really big deal, and I think that's a big get for DAZN. But again, the issue comes up that and this is something we'll tackle in just a sec. I don't think you can show DAZN at bars. I was looking it up as far as how it goes with like being able to show Netflix channels, like, you know, like movies, Netflix shows and stuff. And there's rules against that to a certain extent. So, I mean, commercial use violates terms of use. And so that could be a big issue for bars locally, at least, where, you know, you got the big Canelo Alvarez fight, but can you show it in closed market theaters and, you know, in bars? I don't think you can.
Yeah, and as we've said, if anybody has any insight on this, we would MMALivecast@gmail.com. MMALivecast@gmail.com. We really want to know we want to get an answer for this, and I think maybe we won't really get it until people actually know until Canelo's fight, because that'll be the first big one that'll be in demand that people will flock to restaurants and bars to watch. So, but that is an interesting point that I hadn't even really considered. With that said, what does this say about pay-per-view as a whole? This week, a lot of people were writing the pay-per-view obituary pieces, which I think is appropriate to a level, but I still think you can have pay-per-view. You know, pay-per-view is right. Not dead. McGregor and Habib can do a bazillion buys on pay-per-view. Anything Floyd Mayweather does can do a bazillion buys. So I think pay-per-view is still works for outliers, but this is a big blow. You had Steven Espinosa, you know, who's real big on the Mayweather camp, say, oh yeah, one guy signs with DAZN and suddenly pay-per-view's dead, give me a break. But I think it's strategic, though, in many ways. Like, it's going to be harder, even though these big fights you could pay from. But what about a mediocre fight? What about, you know, was it Berto versus Mayweather, that fight that didn't even do too well on pay-per-view? When you have that level of fight and you try to balance your budget and you're thinking, well, but for $10 a month, I watch all these Canelo fights all the time. It's hard. We see that with Impact and Ring of Honor, less so with Ring of Honor now with the Honor Club, but it's still kind of present. Whenever you have WWE pay-per-views for $9 or New Japan pay-per-views for $9 a month, and then you want to pay $50 for Bound for Glory, that's a really difficult thing to do. And I think that's what's going to happen. So Espinosa is not wrong and that pay-per-view is not dead, but the landscape is shifting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it'll be a good indication as to what the landscape is currently with the December 1st pay-per-view, Wilder versus Fury, the heavyweight boxing championship that will be on Showtime pay-per-view. We'll see what the numbers are there for boxing. So I think there's a distinction you need to make when you're talking about whether or not pay-per-view is dead and for live sports. I think MMA and boxing are still two totally different beasts, and meaning that MMA is still able to do okay numbers month to month with UFC pay-per-views. You know, some of them, like this year especially, they've been really bad. But Conor, Habib has picked things up for the UFC a little bit, and we'll see if it continues for next month's pay-per-view.
Well, they're probably going to close on a really hot streak.
Right. Likely, yeah. And so those hot streaks are kind of what keeps the pay-per-view business going for the UFC. Boxing, on the other hand, just lost in one of its top grossing pay-per-view stars with Canelo Alvarez. I mean, Canelo's been involved in, I think it's, they said, out of the 54 highest pay-per-view buys in boxing history, Canelo Alvarez has been involved in 10 of them. So that's huge. I mean, he's a huge star, and to lose him is a big deal. So we'll see if Wilder can be a pay-per-view draw. Anthony Joshua, who's another one of the biggest boxing stars right now, he's with DAZN already. He had his first fight with DAZN a couple months ago. So I think boxing might be dead in – I'm sorry. I think pay-per-view might be dead in boxing if this keeps happening. You know, all you need now is for Wilder or someone else to go join DAZN or something like that. Or let's see what happens if Fox ends up trying to fill up their vacant territory of no more UFC and FS1 and fill it up with boxing or something like that this could be very well the end of boxing pay-per-view, which is, it is what it is. You know, it's just times are changing. And then hopefully UFC will figure out with all their, you know, UFC Fight Pass, ESPN Plus, everything they got going on. It's just like, maybe we can get some relief on our monthly bill of having to pay $65 a month for sometimes mediocre cards.
Yeah, that, it definitely seems weird for some of these cards that, that they roll out there to have to pay that much when you contrast it with what's going on in boxing and in the WWE. UFC is a little bit different too, and I think this shows the difference in the business model, whereas boxing is the individual and UFC is the collective brand, in that, like, no matter how good of a pay-per-view draw somebody like Canelo can be, Golden Boy and Oscar De La Hoya cannot put on a pay-per-view 12 times a year. Like, that, it just doesn't work that way. There's not enough bankable stars. The top bankable stars are bigger than the majority of the UFC stars, but the UFC brand, I think, still carries enough of a currency where you can kind of squeak out 12 pay-per-views a year, even if it's not necessarily ideal. And I think that shows the difference between the two. But we've talked about it on here before, Rick. The UFC has been in the total tank in the pay-per-view game, and it doesn't really seem to be affecting them very much. Like, I think we know obviously what great pay-per-view numbers are, but we don't know what the bottom necessarily is, where they have to make drastic changes to improve it. And I think that's something that maybe had been overrated over the past few years in the analysis about all of this. What do you get of some of the murmurs that initially there was negotiations between Canelo and UFC Fight Pass?
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to happen. I think that there is some deep-seated tension between boxing and MMA, and there is kind of like a rivalry, and I just don't think there's a transition with the fan base. Like, I think the hardcore boxing fans, to a certain extent, not all of them, but some of them really resent the UFC and the MMA fans. And I think it goes the other way too. So DAZN seems to be this like safe middle ground where that, you know, you can have Bellator and it's not making much noise, but it's doing okay. And then you have all these different boxing promotions and different fighters on there. So I think DAZN, I think it's found its little niche. And I think that their next goal needs to be making sure they're available in all the different formats possible. Because I was looking up on it, and there's a YouTube channel that I watch a lot about boxing and other things called Rummy's Corner, which is where I got some of my information for this. So I got to give Rummy credit. But from what he was saying, DAZN is not available as of now on Sony or Samsung smart TVs. So unless you have a PS4, a Roku, or an Apple TV, you're going to be watching a lot of these fights, DAZN, on your phone. So I think for an older audience base, you know, people are just now who are used to the streaming services like I am, like, or some of you listening out there who already have the Roku or PS4 just attached to your television. A lot of people depend on their smart TVs to have HBO, Netflix, and stuff like that. So DAZN needs to get on there, because if they're going to be paying almost $400 million for Canelo Alvarez, they need to be able to make sure people can watch it.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Yeah, and the big screen is a big part of it, and it's part of why I think sometimes people are a little have some trepidation to go with the streaming service, because they think, oh, well, I don't want to watch a pay-per-view on my phone or on my tablet, and getting it on the TV needs to be something that's accessible with all these streaming services, whether it's ESPN Plus, the WWE Network, New Japan World, getting it on the TV, because as much as we are in the mobile world, pay-per-views are kind of communal events where you have parties and, you know, you know, begrudgingly invites his friends over for him and all that. So we need to keep that tradition alive and well. But this is a huge story, I think, for MMA and for boxing. I think boxing is a big winner here. Boxing was on a real hot streak, it felt like, in 2017 and has had a few big fights in 2018. The boxing was always the sport that seemed to rip you off. And I think this takes that away in a lot of ways. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that for $10 a month, that's not going to be so bad. So I think Canelo, he has two fights that they're trying to work on right now. So with ESPN, So with DAZN, as of now, you got 45 boxing shows coming up in a span of a year, essentially. So you got 45, and two of those fights are Canelo Alvarez fights. So that's for $10 a month, you get 45 boxing shows. That's really good. And some of those might even include Anthony Joshua fights as well, which, again, if you guys didn't see his last fight on DAZN, just the entrance alone in the Wembley Center is an incredible sight to see. And then if you do go over to ESPN or ESPN Plus, which has Top Rank and Bob Arum as a promoter and his fights, you got 50 fights. So if you pay $5 a month for ESPN Plus, and I'm not even including ESPN necessarily, and you pay $10 a month for DAZN, you get 95 boxing fight cards a year. So that's pretty incredible.
That's amazing compared to what it was not very many years ago. And the last thing I'll say about this is to the people who say, well, this doesn't really help boxing in any way because you don't get that outward exposure. Well, it's not like Canelo's not going to be promoted everywhere. It's not like De La Hoya and all these guys aren't going to be on ESPN all the time when he has one of his big fights. I think that argument works against like Bellator being exclusively on DAZN, where the stars of Bellator aren't necessarily big enough that people would seek him out or find him on a streaming service. So they need that support from network TV and or from cable television need to stay on there. I don't think that's as big of a concern with these major, major stars. If Conor McGregor signed an exclusive deal with whatever Netflix or whatever to air all of his fights or Amazon, despite the fact that people may not be able to catch it just from channel surfing, I think people would sign up and figure out a way to watch it via those methods, even if it's not the ideal way to watch things. So I think that's a little bit of an overblown concern in many ways. Rick, let's talk about UFC 230. I thought we could go a week without our UFC 230 madness, but just whenever we were out, they pulled us right back in slightly. Nothing too outrageous this week, but one of the fights that was really kind of keeping the card afloat and something we could always rely on to be solid on this card was Luke Rockhold taking on Chris Weidman. Well, Luke Rockhold had to withdraw due to injury. Chris Weidman, though, he's been a big part of promoting this card. He's going to stay on the card, and he's going to face Jacare Souza. So either way, I think we're still ending up with a pretty good fight, but what a bummer on that fight getting canceled, right?
Oh, this card is getting massacred, isn't it? It's too bad. I was really this is kind of the card. It was funny that we're like, yeah, you know, Habib and Conor, that'll be a good fight night or pay per view, but we're really looking forward to 230. And then it's just been taking hit after hit after hit. And it's sad, too, because the UFC website still hasn't updated the main card. So it still has Weidman and Rockhold listed. So you're just looking at it being like, that's what it could have been. But Souza versus Weidman, that'll be good. It's just not the fight I was excited about. It's not the fight that was on the poster. It's not the fight that these two, when they fought beforehand, their first fight, Rockhold and Weidman, was a really, really good fight. And it was like the two guys at middleweight who were at the peak. And now it's kind of like a redemption fight in many ways. But in the long game, I think this is probably the best move for Rockhold because he could have lost this fight. And I think that right now he should really be looking at light heavyweight. And I think he should move up. And then Weidman, whatever happens with him and Souza, that'll give you a clear number one, number two contender for Brock Whitaker if he gets past that Kevin Gastelum later on.
I totally forgot Whitaker was the champion.
Yeah. That promotion is in disarray completely.
Whenever you were talking about the division, I was thinking, well, wait, who's the champion of that? I was like, wait, is George St. Pierre still the champion? Is Michael Bisping the champion? Right. I completely forgot about Robert Whitaker. Not a nice way for me to treat Bobby Knuckles, who is one of the more entertaining fighters. I just forgot for a minute that he was the champion. Let's talk about the poster that will need to be amended immediately, but just did finally come out because they had the solid main event. You got Cormier standing there with the two belts, and then you got a big X with Derek Lewis's head in like a red filter. What do you think about the poster?
I loved it. I thought it was a really cool poster. I saved it on my phone right away. And it's too bad because, like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I am getting that. That is incredible. But again, unless they update it with Souza standing there looking across Weidman, it's just another false promise. There's some of these posters, you can track these main cards, the disillusions and just the calamities that happen by some of these promo posters. But I mean, if you take Weidman and Rockhold off it and just have Derek Lewis and Cormier there, it's still a great poster. It looks like something from it's like a sequel to an action movie or something.
It's like a movie that would have come out in 1993. That went straight to video, but still has an awesome sequel, but you never heard of till like 4 years ago when you saw it in the bargain bin. That's exactly what that reminded me of.
Oh yeah, it's a great, great poster. And the color scheme on Derek Lewis's face looks really good. Cormier's facial expression's great. The two tiles look good. The way the X is, it has a mix, like you said, of a 90s action movie or a sequel, and kind of an 80s color scheme with Derek Lewis in the middle with the X. Either they take out, for any updated posters, Rockhold and Weidman, or they put Souza in there. But either way, I think it's a win, and they should keep doing stuff like that.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
It's so different from the – I wish they would have been able to do this UFC 229 poster, because that poster, for the magnitude of the fight, was the lamest poster ever.
It really, really was, with the flags and the eyes. That was the whole gimmick of that poster. Maybe after the fact, but the fight wasn't necessarily built around this great nationalism that it kind of maybe turned into. But yeah, that was not good for, like you said, the magnitude of the fight. Let's talk more about Daniel Cormier, though. He did some interviews this week, and he spoke about the fact that with this fight, they took on somewhat of a late notice at UFC 230. He had to cancel a tryout with the WWE to become a commentator. Rick, in the past, you kind of compared Daniel Cormier to trying to do a JR impression with his Thug Rose, Thug Rose, Thug Rose. But beyond that, what are the prospects of Daniel Cormier as a WWE commentator?
I think he could be okay. I just don't know how he would handle the criticism from Dana White, you know, on the main product. So if I were in charge and if I heard Daniel Cormier wanted to be with us, I'd be excited about that as a, you know, executive of WWE. But I would come knocking on Triple H's door and see if he wanted to use him for some trial period on NXT or 205 Live or something like that. Whereas on Raw, I think any commentator who goes Raw eventually gets – something happens and they lose their cool factor.
Yeah, that definitely does happen. I think Cormier has a ton of upside in that role, to be honest, because he's a guy that would be coming from the outside world, has the celebrity, has all those things that they look for. But he's a legitimate follower of pro wrestling and understands it, I think, in a much deeper level than just the person who appreciates it for the spectacle that he is. He understands baby faces, heels, how to build things. He understands a lot of those things. It does get a little overly enthusiastic, but sometimes you need a little bit of that, especially right now when everything is just – it's Michael Cole yelling, Mauro doing these ridiculous pop culture references, and then a bunch of monotone voices. And you say about the Raw thing, and I will agree just because commentary is just generally better away from the main product. But look at some of the scrubs they put on Raw for like really superficial reasons, because Coach was on ESPN. He was terrible in that role. Like, I would guarantee you Cormier would be much better than Coach right off the bat. I have an anti-Coach bias, of course, because I just think he was awful.
And of course.
His Twitter presence is like the worst. I mean, he is the bottom of the barrel as far as discourse goes, is Coach's Twitter account. With that said, I think Cormier would be very good in this role, although we haven't seen him in it. And I'm looking forward to this. I do think this is in the pipeline. This is what I thought CM Punk was going to be doing. That's why I thought CM Punk went to MMA to eventually be a commentator for the UFC. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think Daniel Cormier's involvement in general in pro wrestling as his career winds down is going to be something to look forward to. Do you see him, even if he's not a commentator, being a presence in pro wrestling of some sort?
Yeah, I think him and Mauro would be a really good pairing, and I think that'd be really interesting to hear. So hopefully it happens. And, you know, if he's not going to be fighting much longer, I think this would be the natural transition for him.
Do you think he becomes a pro wrestler at some point?
I think he gets in there and maybe like gets in a, you know, when they do a promo and they have someone else walk in and do a face off, kind of like what Ronda Rousey did with The Rock initially with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania. But I don't know if he makes that full leap. I think he's going to make a lot of money in these next couple fights. He's kind of up there in age, and I think commentary role, kind of like even like Taz, how Taz would still be a commentator for SmackDown and occasionally get up there and do the choke on people.
Yeah,
but
he could be,
I think
he could
that's
be the commentator that you can't bully.
Right.
He'd be the guy that, you know, like Baron Corbin would be looking down on and then, but too afraid to engage with or would, you know, get a kimura on him or something like that. I think that would be, he would be a very interesting guy in that respect. So I think we're kind of on the same page there. Rick, how do you feel that the WWE has done to this point promoting their Evolution pay-per-view coming up this Sunday?
Oh, is that coming up this Sunday?
It is.
Oh, well, that answers your question.
I have a total agreement with you. We joke about these international shows feeling like house shows. This show, which is a legit pay-per-view, feels like a house show. It feels like this novelty show, and you know they're going to make such a big deal out of it this week about being, you know, the first ever all-women's pay-per-view, but I think they could have done a lot better for these women than not. The card itself is decent to can be pretty good, but I just think the promotion of it has just been god-awful.
Yeah, it's definitely – it's so funny because then it's like the Saudi thing is going on in the background, and I would feel that they would want to use this Evolution pay-per-view and or, you know, the show to kind of distract. Like, but they haven't been, and it's just kind of sad, you know, but yeah, I'm good thinking they didn't call it Revolution because that would just be ironic.
It's already pretty ironic, but you got the big women's battle royal with a bunch of past names announced for that. That should be fun. Trish and Lita versus Bliss and Mickie James. They're giving awful promos, but I think the match will be a fun spectacle. The final of the Mae Young Classic. You've got the NXT UK Women's Champion to be crowned. Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler, which will be actually an awesome match, a match that's happened before. Charlotte and Becky have probably the best feud going in the company, so that should be okay. And then at the top, you got Ronda Rousey defending against Nikki Bella. Ronda Rousey's promo this week got a lot of attention for some various reasons. What, some really weird dialogue, the one we'd like to focus on, that she told Nikki Bella that she's a relic from the past, like smallpox waiting to be eviscerated. Which is just a great line that nobody would ever say in any real conversation. And then they kind of did their shoot style back and forth of you're only here because of John Cena and this and that. I thought it was pretty fun. If not, it needed a little editing, I think, which is just the nature of pro wrestling promos. And I'm sure it'll look good in the video package. But something that I hadn't even thought about, we finally get Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler on the same card. Do you think we get any interaction between the two of them this Sunday?
I would keep them separate for now. They kind of feel like they're in two different worlds, even though they're on the same show. So, and Shayna Baszler is not the same kind of character as Ronda Rousey, even though they're friends and they come from the same background. I would just, for now, keep that separate and let that become a moment later on. I mean, like you said, this is not being promoted very well, this show. And so it would be kind of lost if you do it there. I think it should be on a Raw or something like that when you really start to bring Shayna over and make her a true threat to Ronda Rousey.
Right, and on WWE programming, they haven't even really mentioned the fact that these NXT stars are going to be on the show. So it's not like they've mentioned the fact that Shayna would be on the show. So that general audience might not even know that it would be a big moment if there was like a stare down between the two of them. So, and I've said before, Ronda's a pretty good face. And Shane is a pretty good heel. Why would you compromise any of that unless you're going to have them face off right away, which I don't think you would. But if you're going to show them as buddy-buddy, that would just make no sense and completely, I think, compromise the entire structure that they're trying to do with both of those stars on each brand.
And, you know, you talk about being compromised. There's a very good chance that the fans take Shane aside because she's a confident, badass heel. And Ronda Rousey is a confident babyface. But Shayna Baszler doesn't kind of give off some of the little annoying ticks that Ronda Rousey has. I think Shayna Baszler almost comes off as more legitimate.
Well, Shayna Baszler fits more the profile that the hardcore fan would cheer for over Ronda Rousey, although that fan has cheered Ronda thus far as something I was dead wrong on because I thought they would completely go against her.
You and me both.
So I think there is something to be said for that, but it's different whenever there's a choice to be made. Like you have Charlotte as this baby face, who she's not a great baby face, but when she's in there with heels that the audience doesn't care for, she gets a pretty good reaction. When she's there across from Becky Lynch, somebody the audience absolutely loves, then it gets tempered a little bit. So that would be an interesting experiment. But maybe something down the road whenever you do have Shayna actually established as a much bigger star. We'll close on this, Rick. Will you be able next week to objectively analyze a Ronda Rousey match, or are you and I just going to go back and forth on whatever happens in this main event?
It's tough because it's against Abella. So there's going to even be more scrutiny on my side of the world being like, well, does Bella deserve to, Nikki Bella to even be deserve to be in this? And, you know, does Ronda deserve to be in this? Like, so I can't objectively just watch Ronda Rousey matches at this point as the same way I do others. Cause I you know, coming from the MMA background, and now it's just like Ronda from the MMA background and, you know, just kind of the hostility there that she left with fighting someone who is like the mainstay in the diva era, who we're all trying to kind of, we're trying to forget about that time. So it's just kind of a reminder of moments in both MMA and wrestling I wasn't a big fan of as a main event.
Well, and that is a heck of a tease for next week's show, where we will be breaking down this event. There is a UFC event coming up this week. Volkan Oezdemir and Anthony Smith. Pretty good main event, but I don't think the card is something that we really needed to break down on this show. So that's why we want to acknowledge it, but we're not going to break it down kind of fight by fight. But I think it'll be worth your time on a Saturday night on a channel flipping, but nothing too exciting. Rick, you got anything coming up on the Torch this week?
Not at the moment, but once we got UFC 230 coming around, and if it actually sticks together, then I think there should be some writing about it and just some hype going into it, because we do actually have a pretty good main event ahead of us. And the co-main event, even though it got disrupted, is still very acceptable.
And you can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos, and follow the brands on Twitter at MMA Torch, at MMA TORCH. And MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans at MMA Livecast, at MMA LiveCast. And you can send us an email, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALiveCast@gmail.com. I would implore you to check out MMA Torch. We've really ramped up the content. There's a ton of good stuff going on there. A bunch of new roundtables coming in with some pertinent topics to see what the different contributors think, and a divergence of opinions there. Also, don't forget, always check out all the other Torch-related properties, PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast, and of course, the Mothership Go VIP, and listen to all the great audio that's been coming out over the past couple of weeks. But that's all for us this week. So for Rick and Robert, we are out of here, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!